Never surrender. This last Wednesday night with our teens, we started a new series as part of our Wednesday night Bible study called Battlefield. And this series, the whole idea, the concept behind it is the fact that we as people live in conflict. Whether we think we are someone that like everyone gets along with or not, all of us deal with conflict, with struggles in our lives, with pain, and especially in our relationships with other people, especially with the people that we're closest to. And in this series, we're talking about godly ways to deal with our conflict, to deal with our relationships with other people. And in the first lesson that we had this last Wednesday, we talked about how that our relationships are greater than making a point, or are greater than being right. And I have to be honest with you, it was a hard lesson for me to teach, because to be honest, I am a person who likes to be right all of the time. And 99.9% of the time, I am right. But I've made it the point to make sure everyone knows that I'm right. I'm one of those people, if I get in an argument with somebody else about something, it doesn't matter whether it's about, you know, theology or whether it's about whether Coke or Pepsi is better, I will, like, go and research after, you know, we've decided to agree to disagree. And I will go and research my heart out to prove my point. And as soon as I have the evidence to prove that I am right, I go and shove it in their face. Say, ha! Told you I was right. On that 0.1% of the chance that I am wrong, however, I quietly just kind of never mention it again. And the reality of it is, yeah, I might be right, but what have I really done? Except for more than likely hurt the relationship that I have with that person by making sure that I am right. And sometimes I really need to surrender that, okay, maybe I'm wrong more than just 0.1% of the time. That I need to surrender that I am far from right all the time. And this was a really hard lesson for me to learn in general. And to be honest, it wasn't until Kathy and I got married that I really, really started to learn this lesson. And Kathy will tell you to this day, even it is hard for me sometimes to tell her, you were right, I was wrong. Because there's a pride in me of being right. But it causes such conflict. It causes such turmoil. And you know, not just in our relationships with other people and proving and wanting to be right all the time. We just have conflicts in our lives, don't we? I mean, there are actually so many conflicts that we deal with that don't even necessarily have to do with our relationship with someone close to us or with another person. I mean, we deal with all sorts of conflicts in our own lives. Maybe we have a conflict with our own health. You know, we need to take better care of ourselves. We need to eat fewer carbs. We need to work out more. Maybe we're in conflict with our finances. We are swimming in debt and we have no idea how to get out of it. Maybe we're in conflict with our jobs. We absolutely hate where we work, but it's paying the bills right now, and so we keep on keeping on just so that the bills get paid. And I could go on and on and on, and the truth is that if I sat down with you right now, you could probably share with me not just one, but several conflicts or problems or trials that are going on in your life right now. And you know, there are several ways that we handle these conflicts, that we deal with them. But I think there's two that we really tend to lean towards. One, for a lot of us, and this is me, we internalize them. We keep all of these conflicts and trials and bottled up inside in the hope that it's just going to pass, that it's just going to move on. We don't talk to our spouse about it. We don't talk to our parents about it. We don't even talk to our close friends about it. We just deal with the struggle all by ourselves. And the problem with this is that we were not meant to be alone in our struggles. From the very beginning of creation, God saw that it was not good for man to be alone, that he needed a helper, someone to walk side by side to support and encourage him. For others, we tend to go to family and friends. I mean, they're supposed to be our support system, the ones who stand beside us and give us the advice and the encouragement that we need to get through whatever conflict is coming our way. And this can be a great thing. Unfortunately, not every family member or friend always gives the best advice either. I bet you can probably tell me at least one person in your family who is not an encourager at all. And I mean, and what happens when your mom gives you one piece of advice that sounds really great, but then your loving, compassionate, caring grandpa comes and gives you a piece of advice that seems to totally contradict what your mom has advised you to do. And now you have this conflicting advice from people who both love and care for you. What I want to share with you this morning is something that I guarantee will help you in whatever conflict or trial that you're going through in your life right now. If you're dealing with a drug or alcohol addiction right now, this will help you. If you and your spouse are fighting right now, this will help you. If you are unemployed right now, this will help you. If you can't seem to manage and control your children, this will help you. In Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, Jesus says this, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened." Now let's just stop there for a moment. By a show of hands, how many of you does this describe right now? You know, I am weary, I am burdened. I know it does me. For the last month, we have been redecorating the upstairs of our house. We've been moving bedrooms around. What was Natalie's bedroom is now Kathy and I's bedroom. What was our bedroom is now Natalie and Madison's bedroom. What was Maddie's bedroom is now our closet. We've been painting. We've been redecorating. It's still not over. Just painted a bathroom yesterday. And I am tired and I am exhausted. I know Jenna up here, who is up on our praise team, is tired and exhausted. She was part of a group of us that went to Winter Jam on Friday night. Concert didn't end until after 11 o'clock. We got back to the church at about 12:30. She had to be at school at 6 in the morning on Saturday in order to compete in a speech competition. And then she was here, didn't have to be here till 7:30, but was here at like 7:05 this morning to practice for the praise team. I guarantee you, Jenna is a little tired right now. And I'm pretty sure I hear her mom cackling over here. Jeanette's like, yeah, she's not the only one that's tired from all this. And for most of us too, we deal with physical exhaustion, but not just that. We are spiritually and emotionally tired. We are weary. We are burdened. We have a task list a mile long, and meanwhile we're dealing with coworkers that we can't get along with children who aren't sleeping at night. We have the fear of going out because there's robbery after robbery happening. And on top of that, you have a grandma in the hospital who's recovering and who isn't doing so well. And then on top of that, you're dealing with your own demons because all along, because of your stress and your anxiety and your pain, you've been hitting the bottle a little hard and you just feel completely burdened by life. And yeah, there might be moments of relief, but when we are just weary and burdened. And when we feel this way, what does Jesus say to do? He says, come to me. And he continues by telling us what the result of coming to him is. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Hallelujah. That is what we need so much right now. I'm so glad after Winter Jam, my wife let me sleep in till 9 a.m. that when the kids got up early, she took care of them. And you know, before the girls came into our lives, when Kathy and I would go on vacation, it was a time of rest for us. We would usually go after all the summer hecticness of youth ministry was kind of over, but before the fall kickoff stuff would happen and the craziness would start again. And my parents had an ownership at this resort in Missouri where they got 2 free weeks every year, and they would graciously give us one of those weeks so that we could go and stay there and rest. And what I loved about this place was that, like, there was no cell phone service. There was no television. There was no loud music on their lakes. They only allowed trolling motors. So there wasn't even the loud sound of engines. And it was just peaceful and quiet. We hardly ever made plans for what we were going to do on vacation. And it wasn't one of these vacations where you come back home and you're like, man, I need a vacation. You know, we weren't worried about going and sightseeing everywhere or making sure we got to a restaurant on time to beat the crowd or to make our reservation. It was simply a time for us to get away and rest. And it was one of the most refreshing moments to just rest. And Jesus says, if you want to experience rest from that craziness, that burden that is going on in your life right now, come to me. Now the thing is when we come to Jesus for rest, there's more than just sitting and basking in the sun. Jesus actually lets us know that there's work to be done that will lead to the rest. It isn't just a simple matter of coming and that's it. Because you see, he continues and he says this. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Now, this phrase, take my yoke upon you, was a phrase that was very rooted in the Jewish culture. Master rabbis or their teachers had their own particular interpretation of the scriptures. And when a young Jewish male decided that he wanted to continue on with his education, especially if he himself wanted to seek to become a rabbi, he would choose that rabbi that he wanted to learn from, to sit under. And if the master rabbi accepted him as a pupil to study under him, the young man would take the master's yoke upon him. And this would now mean that the young man would leave his family, his community, his synagogue, and go learn and spend time under the master. It would be a difficult daily life as he studied and he followed the rabbi. There was even a prayer in the Mishnah that said, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi, which meant that you followed your rabbi so closely that you would get covered in his dust as he walked along. And Jesus is telling us here, allow me to be your master rabbi. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. follow me. Jesus is telling you, listen, I know you have a lot on your plate right now. I know work is stressing you out. I know your marriage is on the rocks. I know your kid is sick right now, and I get it. And I'm asking you to come to me. Bring all of that stress, all of that baggage, come to me, surrender it to me. You know, that's a word we don't typically like to associate ourselves with. Surrender. Because what does it mean? Typically, it means we've lost. And frankly, if you're like me, you don't like losing. That's why I don't play physical sports, because I will lose all the time. But I hate losing, especially when it comes to things like card games like spades or euchre. Like, I lose, and I might not externally show it, but there's like this rage within me that is mad because I lost. I don't like to lose. And typically surrender means we've lost. I think sometimes the reason why we don't like to lose is because we feel like we should be on the side that won. We also tend to associate surrender with giving up something that we love, figuring that what is to come is even worse. But what if surrender here really means giving up something for something better? And what if surrender meant that we were actually joining the side of the team that is going to win? What if surrender really was the best thing that we could do? Jesus is saying, come to me, lay down your weapons, as in your burdens, your pains, your sorrows, your addictions, your conflicts, lay them down before me, and I am going to give you rest. And what is amazing about the yoke of Jesus, though, is what he says next. Because when a young man would take on the yoke of his master rabbi, it would be a difficult thing. But Jesus says, he says, I am gentle and humble at heart. And I want to give you rest. And so unlike other first century master rabbis, Jesus says his yoke is easy, and his burden is light. So you say, okay, yeah, I'll give my problems to somebody else. But really, that's a lot easier said than done, isn't it? And the reality of it is we need to surrender it all to him and to take his yoke upon us. He desires to give us rest from our burdens. And the key to finding that rest is by taking the yoke upon us to learn from him. Now, wouldn't it be like the most awesome experience ever if instead of Steve preaching on the languages of love this next month, we were actually able to bring in Jesus Christ himself as a guest preacher for February so that we could learn directly under him, straight from his mouth? I don't think exactly we're going to get that experience. But the truth is, we have his teachings. We have his word. You know, all of God's word is inspired. The entire Bible is inspired. But we specifically have the teachings of Jesus himself found in the first four books of the New Testament, the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And so here's the thing. I have a challenge for us as a family here at Calvary. That for the next month, we take it seriously to take the yoke of Jesus upon us. To study his teachings, his interpretations of scriptures. And since today is the last day of January, I'm going to encourage us to start this tomorrow. And I'll tell you what, I wish it wasn't a leap year, because this would have worked perfectly had it not been a leap year. Because what I want us to do is I want us to take the book of Matthew for the month of February. Matthew has 28 chapters, which normally February has 28 days, but we got to throw that extra leap day in there this year. So maybe you'll have a catch-up day. And I want us to each day just take one chapter from the book of Matthew. And study it. Not just read it, but to study it. And maybe for you that means going out and buying a commentary on the book of Matthew. Maybe that means looking up some commentaries through Google about Matthew. Maybe that means that I really am having a hard time struggling understanding this. So you come to Pastor Steve or myself or one of our elders or one of our other teachers, and you ask them about it. That we take seriously taking the yoke of Jesus upon us. To surrender everything to him and to learn from him, to follow him. You know, so often we want to cling to the things that we know, even the things that might be bringing us down. Because, you know, that's what we're familiar with. We don't want to give up or lay anything down because we find comfort and safety in those things. But remember to surrender it and to take the yoke of Jesus upon you. To follow him. Because here is his promise. When you surrender it all to him, when you come to him, lay it down before him, when you follow him, when you take his yoke upon you, when you learn from him, when you study what he says, what the Son of God sent from heaven above, what the Creator of life has to say about life, that is when you will find rest for your weary, burdened soul. You know, at the beginning of my message, I played a clip for you from the movie Galaxy Quest, in which the motto that is repeated throughout the movie is never give up, never surrender. Reminds me of Lieutenant Hiro Onoda. Lieutenant Onoda was sent by the Japanese Army to the remote Philippine island of Luzon in 1944. To conduct guerrilla warfare in World War II. On December 17th, 1944, as his unit was leaving for their mission, their division commander gave this order to the leaders. You are absolutely forbidden to die by your own hand. It may take 3 years, it may take five, but whatever happens, we'll come back for you. Until then, so long as you have one soldier, you are to continue to lead him. You may have to live on coconuts. If that's the case, live on coconuts. Under no circumstances are you to give up your life voluntarily. These are words that Lieutenant Onoda took seriously. Soon after arriving on the Philippine island, it was overtaken by the Allies. And Onoda and his men retreated to the inner regions of the island. Lieutenant Onoda's cell at this point had dwindled down to just four men, including himself. The men lived closely together. They learned to live off the land, and they would occasionally fight in skirmishes. In October of 1945, Onoda and his men first saw a leaflet that said that the war had ended. However, it didn't make sense to them because just a few days earlier, one of the other cells had been fired upon. And so they figured that it was a ruse. At the end of 1945, leaflets were being dropped all over the island to let them know the war was over, for them to come out of the mountains, including the leaflets included the surrender order from General Yamashita. However, the only proof Onoda and his men had was these leaflets. And so they scrutinized them, every word. And time and time again, they came to the conclusion, oh, this is just a ploy by the Allies. Leaflets continued to drop, along with newspapers, even photographs and letters from the relatives. But they always found something suspicious about it, and they refused to surrender. Finally, in 1949, Akastu, one of Onoda's men, wanted to surrender. So in September, he was able to sneak away from his men, spent 6 months alone in the jungle, and finally was able to make his surrender. Now this made Onoda and the other two men with him take even more precautions because now they felt that there was a security risk. On May 7th, 1954, almost 10 years after being given their original assignment. The men were involved in another skirmish that led to the death of Shimada. Now there was just Onoda and one comrade, Kozuka. For nearly the next two decades, these men continued to live in the jungle together, waiting for the time that the Japanese army would call on their help again. From their division commander's orders, they believed that it was still their duty to remain behind enemy lines and participate in guerrilla warfare. Then in October of 1972, 27 years after originally taking their orders, Kozuka was killed in a skirmish with the Filipino police. Lieutenant Onoda now had an inner struggle because per his commander's orders, he could not kill himself, but he no longer had a single man to command. So he continued to hide. Then in 1974, a college dropout by the name of Norio Suzuki went to the Philippines and to several other countries, and he told his friends that while he was gone, he was going to search for three things. A panda, the abominable snowman, and Lieutenant Onoda. Now, I don't know about the panda or the abominable snowman, but where so many others had failed, Suzuki succeeded, and he found Lieutenant Onoda. And he tried to convince him that World War II was over. Onoda said that he would only surrender if his commander ordered him to do so. So Suzuki went back to Japan and was able to locate Onoda's former division commander. And on March 9th, 1974, the three men met at a pre-appointed place, and the division commander read the orders to cease all combat activity. After nearly 30 years of refusing to surrender, refusing to believe that he could stop fighting, the surrender finally came, but only after killing dozens of Filipinos and injuring approximately 100 others, and after the needless deaths of two of his comrades. Lieutenant Onoda was waiting to hear his master's voice to tell him he could surrender. And I don't know who your master is right now. Your master might be your job. Your master might be your money. It might be drugs, alcohol, or pornography. Your master might be your own pride. But the truth is that there is a battle raging. There is a battle for your soul. A battle for who your master's going to be. And I'm telling you that while the battle may be raging, the war is over. And there's only one master who's victorious. There's one master rabbi who is telling you, come to me. Surrender to me. It is okay to stop fighting. Come, learn from me. And when you do, I promise you, I will give you rest. You can rest from the battle when you learn from me because you know that you're on the winning side. Now, the international sign of surrender is the white flag. The origins of the white flag aren't completely clear, but there are mentions of its use as early as the first century AD. Today, as you leave, a couple of our teens are going to be back at the door to hand you one of these. Small little white flag. And what I want you to do with this flag is to put it someplace that you're going to see it every day. Someplace that's going to remind you, especially maybe when you first get up, that you know what, I know I've got a lot on my plate today, but I need to give it to Jesus. I need to see what he has to say about what I'm going through in my life right now, and I need to give it to him. I need to surrender it to him, to lay it all before him. Maybe you put it in a place as a reminder over the course of the next month, and you know what? I need I need to study Matthew chapter 1 today. I need to learn from him. I need to give it all to him because, you know what, I've been fighting it for so long. I just can't do it anymore. Here in a minute, we're going to sing our invitation song, and it's called White Flag. It's an anthem declaring that we are going to give it all to Jesus because the war is over. And we want to be on the winning team. We want to be with him. And I need to surrender my life before him. And for some of you, you have never done that. Because the idea of surrender to you is like crazy. Get lose, but no, trust me, when you surrender to him, you have nothing but victory. And maybe you have surrendered to him, but you know what? You realize, man, I've been like a Benedict Arnold, and while I've said I surrendered to him, I've still been fighting for the enemy, and I need to surrender myself again, and I need someone to pray for me. I need someone to just come over me, to pray, to study with me, so that I can completely surrender to Christ again. As we sing this song, I encourage you, come forward so we can talk with you, we can pray with you, we can figure out what we can do to help you as you surrender to Christ. I would encourage you to stand, and if you have some sort of decision on your heart, Pastor Steve is going to be up here, and he would love to pray with you, would love to talk with you as we sing this song, White Flag.